Robert Duvall could get it.
Yeah. That's a really good Robert Duvall. I think that's like one of my, like, a lot of people are in amazing roles in that movie.
Yeah.
Like Robert Duvall's role is so good as the as Tom Hayden.
Yeah, so good.
Anyway. Yeah.
I wish I could, you know, have kill someone in a restaurant and then go fuck off to Italy. To Sicily for a year.
And fuck, like, a lady with, yeah, like, fuck, yeah, a lady with, like, no nipples. I don't know. That's the thing
that
always...
the smoothest proposal I've ever seen in my life, by the way. I was, like, taking notes. Yeah. Like, you could lose a daughter instead of gaining a son. I was like, oh! That's smooth as shit, dude. Yeah. It's good.
Apollonia. There are so many, like, I don't know why I remember. There is such a big part of... I don't know why I have so much mental space devoted to The Godfather, but I do.
One of my roommates in college had a poster, and then she had the, like, little puppet tattoo. She was obsessed with it.
Oh, cute.
Yeah.
Actually, I love the book. There's a whole scene in the book that's like a vaginoplasty. It's pretty great. If you ever want to know. Trigger warning. There's a vaginoplasty. It's actually a pelvic floor surgery. Because there's a whole thing about Sonny having a huge dick, and it's only alluded to in the movie briefly at the wedding. Yes, yes, the hand gesture.
I was like, get it, girls.
It's explored in much more detail.
Oh,
in the
it's
book.
Explored.
Yes, it is thoroughly a major plot point in the book. Sonny's massive dong.
Oh, Sonny. Okay, I think maybe Kyle forgot or something. I'm sorry. I feel bad. It's my fault.
It's only 7:16.
It's 8:16
in the central time zone.
Kyle is in Boston.
Well, Boston.
He's in Boston because he works at Harvard.
Harvard Yad.
So apparently, Chris's parents are really into The Departed, even though it's New Hampshire, but Boston's like, I could
fucking
sneeze and hit Boston.
The
fucking Departed.
The fucking,
like,
Departed.
I've never seen The Departed, but he
allegedly,
showed me the rat.
Allegedly, go fuck yourself.
He showed me the rat at the end.
Just that?
Yeah, because I've never seen it. And he's like fucking sick of it because his parents.
That's another movie that I have a lot of brain space devoted to.
See,
because
I love Scorsese.
That's another movie I got obsessed with in college. So there's a Korean movie it's actually based on called Infernal Affairs.
That's right. I remember reading that.
And it's pretty good. So, I mean, you could always watch Infernal Affairs, which would be like watching
Instead
The Departed,
the fucking Departed.
Without watching The Departed, but then you would miss Alec Baldwin going face to face with Marky Mark, with Matt Damon in the middle, and Leo DiCaprio being weirdly sexy.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't find Leo DiCaprio sexy at all, but some reason he's
Except
hot in that
Romeo
movie.
And Juliet.
I've never seen that.
He crosses the, like, twink butch.
That's not my thing.
Continuum. He's hot, yeah.
That's not
my thing either, but I want to look like it. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just know the soundtrack whips.
It does whip.
We used to listen to that a lot when it came out.
I mean, yeah, it's great. Fucking whips.
Fucking whips. Whoop whips.
Whoops. We need to have our own little segment. Let's talk about movies so Jake
can get
cinemas. It out.
I just finally watched 9 to 5.
Oh!
If someone had told me that Dolly Parton soft doms Dabney Coleman in a fantasy revenge scenario when she's high, I would have watched it lickety-split.
I got to see it, because I'd seen it before, but I got to see it on my 21st birthday.
Cute.
And in Champaign-Urbana at the, not the art theater, but the other one.
Yeah.
They were doing a screening, and me and my friend snuck in some flasks of alcoholic beverages. And so I was getting, like, tipsy watching 9 to 5 up in the balcony.
Nice.
I was like...
I was watching it drinking beer on my bike, so I was getting tipsy, too.
Did you guys...
No, it wasn't my 21st birthday. I don't remember how old I was.
Am I muted?
I was in grad school.
I was 32 on my bike last night.
Oh, okay. You're 32?
Yeah.
You know you're not muted, Sadie. My tongue. But
I really...
But now she's muted herself trying to unmute.
I really enjoyed that movie a lot, and I wish I had seen it sooner.
This is no longer muted.
Yay.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Okay. Okay. I'm using the button and it doesn't show up on like the Zencaster.
Yeah. It blinks when it's on.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure which way it was, but yeah, did you guys, either of you see that TikTok that was like somebody saying that if you slowed down Dolly Parton or sped up Hozier, it was the same music? Like, if you slow down Dolly Parton, it became Hozier.
I've been pronouncing it wrong this entire time.
I have no idea. I don't know.
I don't know who that is.
He's the, take me to church, I'll worship Black Dawn.
I don't
know. The horny Irish Catholic.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no frame of reference for that whatsoever. Oh,
it is Hozier.
Yeah, I'm one of those people who's like, kind of like, there are a lot of pop cultural references that I will miss.
I'm a pop culture void, yeah. No, my wife got really, really excited about it because Dolly Parton's from Appalachia. Am I saying that right?
Appalachia.
It goes both ways. And I'm fine with it.
And she was like, this proves that it's the accents are very similar and that Appalachia is like.
It was settled by Irish.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Well, yeah. In the settler colonialist project of America.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Southern accent is way closer to the way British English used to be pronounced than received pronunciation is now.
Yeah. There's the Tangiers Island, where basically English has been unchanged for like 400 years. It's off the coast of Virginia.
Oh, yeah. He's like, have you ever seen the actors that try to do that will do Shakespeare as it was actually pronounced, and you get a lot more jokes out of it?
They sound like Hagrid.
Yeah, well, it's like in one of them where it's like hours and hours, it's actually pronounced oars and oars. And so it sounds like you're saying whores and oars.
Oars and oars.
Oars and oars, yeah.
Light bulbs. That actually, this is a very full circle conversation with accents. Uh-oh.
Ten minutes in.
Shoppers, many cities have local ordinances prohibiting smoking on the sales floor of a retail store. We ask that you cooperate by safely extinguishing all smoking materials in the containers provided at the entrance to the store. Thank you for not smoking.
I love this like Full House background music.
I wish smoking was the least of our problems in a retail environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got some fun new drops based on...
New drops about to drop.
From the Kmart tapes?
That's the only one from the Kmart tape. That was really funny. Most of them were like, layaway exists. It's like, eh, whatever.
My brother worked at a Kmart for 5 years during high school and college. And him and his friends, they used to prank each other and like do things like put condoms on layaway and stuff. Mm-hmm. Really good. Really good stuff. High school pranks.
Car pranks.
Just friend I do car pranks with.
Misbehaving.
Run through the house with a pickle in my mouth.
Running through the house with a pickle in my mouth.
Misbehaving.
We are officially misbehaving on this podcast.
Justin's going to fire us.
I don't pay you to goof off.
You don't pay me at all.
Yeah, you don't pay us, period.
You're fired like I said, from I don't this pay voluntary you to give gig.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's working out.
I mentioned something to my boss about like my friend started a podcast and I'm on it, and he was like, "Oh, that's really cool. Like, what is it?" And I was like, "I'm not going to tell you because it's not very professional." Because he's like a straight-laced cinnamon roll, and I just don't want to ruin that.
Yeah, I tell my coworkers, because like during our faculty meetings, and we're all pretty close, right? We have like a little like round robin, and you can like tell cool things you're doing. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm doing like a library podcast now, where it's like from a leftist perspective, so you know, politics, and I'm not professional at all in it. But you know, if you want to listen to it, here you go.
Yeah.
So you know, some of them follow my Twitter, so they can't be too shocked.
Yeah, I put it on Tumblr. See if that'll get any views.
Yeah.
I have very strict...
we haven't introduced ourselves. We're terrible.
We haven't even done our show.
Our intro. Cold open?
Yeah.
We well, no, I'm going to do the cold open as Jay saying, who could get it? I forgot. But that's going to be the cold open.
Robert Duvall could get it.
Robert Duvall could get it.
In the Godfather.
Welcome to Library Punk. Robert Duvall can get it.
It's just going to cut straight to the music.
I just kept going like, Chris, Robert Duvall could get it.
In 1977, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. No guest this week.
Maybe. Probably.
Probably at this point, no guest.
Yeah.
The I put in a link to the creepy AI faces recently. I don't know if everyone got a chance to look at it, but it's... They're taking old photos, so I guess we're going to talk about fair use, because it's fair use week.
Yeah.
And they're really creepy looking because they're not like, they don't have skeletons, and like the so the muscle movement is kind of like jello. Ugh.
Uncanny Valley-esque.
Is this the old photographs that Moore?
Yeah, like of Emily Dickinson.
Yeah, not
this reminds me of deep fakes, and I hate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's
essentially what they are.
Yeah, they're deep fakes. They use the same technology, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Probably. Ugh. Sounds about right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I'm watching it right now.
Yeah, you can just upload any photo. Like, people are uploading, like, the, like, a really weird one is, like, the Van Gogh self-portrait.
Yes, I was just looking at that one. I mean, it's a really interesting thing about, like, copyright of your image, because it's, like, is it a particular photo, or is it just, like, you as a person, right? Or, like, when you give... you know, your DNA to all those Ancestry 23andMe people, like, do they, don't they, like,
can
actually
they
get, like,
your face from that, though?
No, but, like, don't they, because they retain some sort of rights to it once you
yeah.
send it to them.
Yeah, there's,
a private
there's
company.
No, there's no data, there's no data retention policy on those sites.
I thought they gave you, they thought they had, like, privacy or copyright over your genetic code or something if you sent that to them.
They can like license it or something.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
There's all kinds of weird stuff around
like
it.
They got the Golden State Killer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of shady shit around it. And I think that links back to like our conversation last week a little bit.
Well, I think the Golden State Killer was also because Patton Oswalt's wife was a true crime writer. Mm-hmm.
And that was like her idea that how they would catch him.
And her name was
Michelle McNamara.
Yes, thank you.
Michelle McNamara.
I almost said his current wife's name, mm-hmm. which is Meredith Salinger. Mm. And I was like, no, it's Michelle McNamara.
Yeah, I've read You'll Be Gone in the Dark. It's really good. I'm not even a big true crime person, and I really like that book.
I'm the opposite of a true crime person because I watched too much 2020 when I was younger.
I wish too much unsolved mysteries. And like
also, when my birthday was like a major date in the Making a Murder series, I was like, oh, I gotta stop this.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like this Virginia Woolf one at all.
Uh-uh.
No, some of them are really, they don't work. But it's really interesting because it's pretty powerful because you just anyone can upload to it. So normally you'd have to have like an artist do this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Just like the ethics.
So are we all artists now?
I mean, it's definitely like a fair use issue because like, you know, people are trying to write AI into fair dealing and fair use. But, you know, I mean, some of these photos are eventually going to be ones that are still under copyright. Someone's going to try, you know, photos from the 40s and 50s.
Does that count as transformative?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that would be the argument if the Google Books precedent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is that this is transformative because it's not like replacing a market. Like, it's not like you were going to buy that photo, but instead you've got this 3D photo. So for I guess for people who don't know anything about fair use, we can go over the four-factor test before we do our warm-up, because I also want to go over the playing copyrighted music. Mm-hmm. So the four-factor test. So they're basically the annoying thing about fair use, but also the kind of thing that makes it work is that there's almost no conclusive answer. So a lot of like faculty, for instance, say, oh, it's an educational use, therefore it's a fair use. And that's not how it works.
Yeah, my copyright professor said like it fits on a PowerPoint slide, the entire like wording of that law, of that part of the law, one slide.
Yeah. It balances four different factors that all have to be weighted independently. And I was in a fair use game show this week. And one of the questions was like, is this fair use? And it was split 49-51. So like that shows you how annoying copyright can be because no one in the room could agree. These were all like librarians and faculty members. But a lot of people go, oh, if it's an educational use, that's it. And it's like, well, no, because you can't like copy an entire textbook and put it in your course because that's impacting the market, which is one of the factors. So,
and plenty of for-profit stuff is still fair use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like you could sell fan fiction if you wanted to, if it's transformative. But
yeah, you might still get sued.
And riced.
Yeah, enforcement is the whole of the law, mm-hmm. because we would all be guilty of breaking copyright like every day if it was fully fully enforced. So the first factor is the purpose and character. So nonprofit and educational uses are higher than for-profit and like creative uses. And that goes into the second one, which is the nature of the work. Factual and published works are more likely to be a fair use than creative works, which is annoying if you're teaching creative works. So that again, you have to balance out the different factors. The amount used, smaller is better, but a full copy can be fair use. So for instance, uploading a photo into Ancestry, like you're using the whole work, but in a way that is nonprofit and that is about factual work. And then the effect on the market, does your use impact sales? And so that's kind of what the Google book case was, is, you know, Google was pointing people to where you could buy the books. I mean, like on Google Books probably, but it was still like not really replacing the market and had too much of a scholarly value. And that was the judgment of the court, whether or not, you know, that's right.
And with the amount used, the way that I've heard that one particularly phrased is the heart of the work as well, because it could be a very small amount, but if that's like the heart of it, like why someone would seek that work out, that might actually not be fair use, even if it's a small amount. Whereas like you could have a bigger section that like no one gives a shit about, and that would be fine, even if you're kind of tiptoeing the line a bit. But yeah, that was, it was always described to me as like the heart of the work was a really big factor of that.
Yeah, like that political expose that was written about Trump, the only part of that book anyone cared about was like one chapter that had to do with like the P tape or something. I don't remember what it was.
Right.
But like if you had only copied that chapter, it would be less than like 10% of the book, which is what faculty are told a lot. It's like it's an urban myth among faculty.
Yeah,
it's 10% or less. And that's kind of like if the teacher doesn't show up. And
yeah, that percentage guideline is really flimsy.
Yeah, it's like it's the same kind of urban legend as like if the teacher doesn't show up in 10 minutes, you can leave.
Yeah, I'm convinced that like vendors and publishers came up with the percentages because they don't want librarians and like teaching faculty to push back against it and actually exercise their rights. Maybe.
Yeah, because like if you have a pamphlet, what's 10% of a pamphlet versus 10% of an infinite jest, right? Like. Yeah.
Those are very different amounts.
Pages.
Exactly. So yeah. I mean, like you really have to consider like that effect or that impact of like what portion are you using, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the four factors. So we can keep those in mind as we're talking about other stuff. So I want to go back to the cop playing copyrighted music. So I have the whole thing.
Yeah,
the whole thing is a drop.
I love to talk about this.
I'm asking you a question. I'm asking you a question. You're not now music. Beverly Hills PD places licensed music. I'm asking you a question. You're not now doing your job, are you?
So he's in a police office station, and the cop is just staring at his phone.
Sir, you're putting on music when I'm trying to talk to you.
Well, this guy's streaming
on
Instagram.
Turn that off. It's a little ridiculous.
Yeah, what a choice.
Can you please turn that off?
Sublime.
Well,
yeah, of all the songs.
It's not on there, right? Well, it's not. Apparently,
turn
it off.
No, not. The cop just lies, and he's like, "Oh, I'm just trying to look at something."
So anyway.
Yeah, because like counter protesters.
That would be ideal. Yeah.
I could barely hear you through the glass.
Now this is later. Same cop. He walks up to the cop outside, and he immediately starts playing music again. And the guy starts walking backwards.
You're doing that. What he's doing is he's playing music to try to make it. What are you doing by playing music? Why are you playing music? Well, then turn down your music.
I can't hear you.
Then turn down your music. That doesn't make sense, does it? Maybe you should put your body cam on. Maybe the body cam should have been on earlier. We're in an active crime scene, right? There's a chopper in there. Sergeant Fair's no body cam. I'm done. Done with you.
And didn't another cop do the same
thing?
No
good, champ. No good. No good.
No good, champ.
You know what?
Champ.
You know what people
my
say?
Guy.
Buddy.
My dude.
Don't call me buddy, guy.
Don't call me guy, buddy.
How what? Dude, that's what we're dealing with. Do you see that?
So this Vice article calls Sublime ska instead of complete utter shit, which is
and
the
also,
genre it actually is.
Ska's actually good.
It should have been Caress Me Down, which is a better song.
Or
it shows this cop has no taste.
Anything else.
Well, yeah. So when I first saw it did say there was another cop, but the video I watched, it was the same cop, but later, like outside where this guy was trying to film him.
Yeah. So is that fair use?
So here's the thing. Enforcement is the whole of the law.
Exactly.
You can do something that's fair use, but automated systems like on YouTube and Instagram will flag anything, whether or not you have a license. So like when YouTube was suing, I think, Viacom when Viacom was suing YouTube, it had picked up things that it had uploaded itself.
Yeah.
Or something like
that.
The
bots don't know.
Yeah, a bot doesn't know if you have a license.
Right.
Yeah.
So Inyas Vivo was getting flagged left and right for all the Orinoco flows, all the sail aways, all the only times.
I was just reading the EFF's Unfiltered about the YouTube content ID. It talks a lot about that. Like, I don't know if any of you guys have watched Todd in the Shadows.
I love Todd in the Shadows. Yeah. He's like my favorite like pop music critic.
Yeah, they interviewed him for this, I guess. I hadn't gotten to that part yet, but yeah, like he said
all the time.
Yeah, and he just stopped trying to even get money off of the advertisement. He's just decided
Patreon.
It wasn't exactly. It's just all Patreon because it's not worthwhile. And he says it's going to change, you know, he could edit for the content ID today and then 2 days from now, it'll get flagged because they've changed exactly how it works.
And I think it's like if you get a certain amount of flags or takedowns or something, then they just like delete your account.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. They can.
Yeah.
And you can get flags on videos you've already taken down.
Exactly.
Which has happened to people. So the whole system is like you could lose like, you know, if you have like a million followers, that's like a livelihood.
Yeah.
Like DMCA is sort of opposite as to how the law is supposed to work. And that like in the law, it's like you have to be proven guilty or assumed innocence. Whereas DMCA, you are assumed guilty and you have to prove innocence. And DMCA is terrible and awful. This is the one bad thing Prince ever did.
Mm-hmm.
They also interview Lindsay Ellis, which I'm not sure if this is before or after the ABO lawsuit debacle, but I'm kind of hoping it's after so she can talk about it. Because
that would be cool to talk about. Like,
DMCA is a threat.
Hers wasn't fair use because she was being critical.
Yeah.
She was actually, that's the definition.
Yeah, I remember like when we were watching that video, I actually paused it and looked at my wife and was like, that's the actual like definition of fair use is you got to use it. Like if you're using it as for criticism or something like that, then it's fair use. So like this person clearly has no idea what they're talking about. But
yeah, like the trend of fair use, like about like probably 5-10 years ago, it was all on, and even probably older than that, it was all on satire and criticism. Because you had like all of the like that guy with the glasses folks, they kept getting their videos flagged for their reviews once they moved to YouTube. And they did this whole like, where's the fair use what the fuck, like, campaign. And now it's all about transformative works. It's like fair use is sort of synonymous with transformative now, where it used to be sort of synonymous with satire and criticism. Ignoring that it can be other things. Like, it can just be like art or educational, right? But I feel like that's sort of the trend. It moved away from, oh, it's satire, so therefore it's fair use to this is transformative. So,
which is a difficult case to make, actually. Yes. Because almost everything is derivative, and so a derivative work is not fair use. It has to be transformative in some way. So
exactly.
you are already counted against you because it's a derivative. I also, going back to automated platforms, Patreon is probably going to start scanning files for copyright stuff. Mm-hmm. So God, that's probably not going to last very long. But Twitch has gotten so crazy about it that they didn't have a license to play Metallica.
Yes, I love that one. I watched that folk video.
I was like, fuck, trying to find out.
They played fucking Muzak over Metallica on a Twitch stream, and
it's just
my heart was so best. Warm because Metallica fucking sucks, mm-hmm. and they suck for what they did to Napster in the 90s, and they continue to suck, and yep. fuck them. And you know what?
Karma. And that's the wrong way to use karma. I'm a Buddhist, I know, but still, karma, baby.
Yeah, I was a big LimeWire user back in the day.
LimeWire, FrostWire, all that
stuff. I got money from a Kazaa settlement, so.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in my day. Oh, I've got to send you guys the 2005 Scene Kids skit from.
Oh, no.
2 minutes to late night.
I couldn't afford to be a scene kid, so.
But he basically has a memory problem, and one of the other guests is like, she's like, why does my iPad not work? And it's like, well, you gotta stop downloading revenge films off of Kazaa. Who uses Kazaa anymore? The guy's like, I do.
He's like, yeah, man. Kazaa on dial-up in the year 2002. That's all I'm going to say about my internet usage.
You had to build your life around it.
Mine was discographies through uTorrent was my
and
big thing.
And my parents yelling at me.
Yep.
My dad taught me how to do it.
My mom
taught me how to use LimeWire.
My dad taught me how to use uTorrent.
I learned how to do it all on my own. And my parents yelled at me the whole way because I tied up the phone line.
Yep. I had a mixtape hustle going because I was the only one who could figure all of it out.
Yeah, I could do that too. But we had dial up, but it was tied to our, this is a weird tangent, but I like to talk about the Wild West of dial up internet in the late 90s and early 2000s because my parents were so cheap that, they wouldn't buy a separate phone line just for the internet. So they ran it through our home phone line and we had to disconnect the phone from the wall and buy an extra long phone cable to run from the computer to the wall outlet where the phone was. And I was only allowed 30 minutes a day because it would tie up the phone too much.
Which now would be great. Like, I don't want anyone calling me about my car insurance or my car warranty.
No, but like my dad still doesn't have a cell phone. And like none of us had cell phones back then. So that was the only way to get a hold of my dad, who's a janitor and like was on call. So
remember when we had phone numbers memorized?
Oh, God.
I still kind of do.
My dad's memorized.
Yeah, I know my parents' number, my brother's number.
Yeah, I don't know anyone's number.
I don't really have anything good to add to fair use other than. I like Weird Al.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think I like to explore the area of satire and parody in fair use. I think it's really interesting because even though parody is allowed, Weird Al is someone who always asks permission.
And that's why he never did a Prince song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's because Prince never gave him permission, even though, you know, he could still legally do it.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things that's like, you know, a really like why if Weird Al were ever like a sex freak, I would probably just kill myself.
That brings up an interesting point about like it can still be legal, but like whether or not the creator gets mad at it and how much influence that has on what happens.
Like, yeah. the legality is there, but like whether or not it's good practice.
Right. Or kind of the opposite. I think I mentioned this in like the group chat one time, but about and like, you know, not that I'm like trying to defend our former president or anything, but like when he got the meme from his Twitter taken down that had the Nickelback photograph video in it, because that was copyright infringement. It actually wasn't.
Or
it
like
was still, or the rally stuff where like bands was like, you can't use
been
my all,
yeah, Springsteen and yeah. There have been a few other bands that have requested that their songs not be played at his rallies. But I mean,
you have to go through the whole like performance rights licensing.
Exactly.
People for that, I think. They can't just go like, this is copyright infringement. You have to stop.
Exactly.
To actually go through like a whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think about like, I mean, even like leading up to the events on January 6th, like I remember there was like a lot of commentary about the music being played at like the Stop the Steal rally itself that Trump was hosting. I'm trying to remember what some of the music they were commenting on was. Like, oh yeah, people were, it was Celine Dion was one of the songs. Oh, my heart God. Will go on.
These are very into the fact that he's really into YMCA.
Yeah, yeah, he was the Village People requested that he stopped playing that. And then I remember that, like, yeah, like basically music sets publicly licensed to basically be DJ'd at rallies and stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember people being like, yeah, can you not play that at just as background music? And I remember like some of the background music was like Celine Dion and stuff. And it was being played over Fox News and stuff while they were interviewing people.
Amazing. Well, I mean, if they took it away, I mean, this isn't very easy, so it's not really copyright, it's licensing, whatever.
Right. But yeah.
Like, if you,
but still, licensing kind of falls into that.
Yeah. People actually confuse it a lot, actually, in like trademark law as well. Because a lot of people are like, oh, the Coca-Cola logo is copyrighted and it's trademarked. But anyway, if they were to like, oh, you please don't let him play my song or whatever, they would actually have to like remove them from like all of the places that like use that same licensing.
Yeah,
it's all very
music
automated.
Licensing's weird, because it's like, I can't remember the outlets that do it.
It's like B something.
Yeah,
because it's actually different than like royalty. Like it's music. Anything is so complicated.
Yeah, music's very complicated.
Yeah, public performance versus.
And also mechanical licenses, which you have to give.
Well, and also, like, if you have sheet music versus public, so, like, sheet music, so playing something off of sheet music or sheet music reproduction versus performance versus a recording versus X, Y, and Z. Like, there are so many dimensions to music copyright that are very thorny that I only know some parts of.
That's what got me into copyright, was music copyright.
Yeah, mine was sheet music copyright because of, I think I told the story about an orphan copyright work that we used to play at competitions when I was in high school. Mm. That was a toccata by Tariello. Mm-hmm. And my piano teacher only had one copy of it because it was no longer in print.
Ooh.
And so she just kept making photocopies of it for students to learn off of.
I love that.
And then for competition, because you had to have an original copy for competition, we had a competition copy, which was the original print. And so we would always photocopy our music if there was like, and especially when it comes to auditioning with music, especially for arrangements and stuff, because even if a work is technically in public domain, you can have an arrangement that is not, mm-hmm. because of when it's copyrighted, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I mean, I didn't usually run into these things because I played a lot of like contemporary and romantic composers, as did most of my other people I played at the studio with. But like, so with the Tariello toccata, we would keep a clean copy for competition judging, right? Because they needed an original copy of the music. And we would have to photocopy it illegally to learn.
I love that.
Yeah.
And so much sheet music has the do not photocopy thing on it. And it's just the Garfield meme of, huh, wonder who that's for.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was totally. Just labeled music professors.
Yeah, because like you have to be able to mark it up in order to learn a piece. Like that's how you learn, is you mark it up.
You put it in a little plastic sleeve and you write on it with markers. That's what you do.
Oh no, we use pencil.
But yeah, you just write on it.
Yeah, like we use pencil and put in, and we three hole punch it in binders. But you're bringing me back
to my high school choir days here, just like slightly off kilter copies, you know, where it would be like just a little tilted. You can tell it's a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy.
Y'all, I got binders full of this shit.
Binders full of.
I got binders full of illegal sheet music.
You should have seen the sheet music we had in the Middle Eastern Music Ensemble when I was in college, because most of the like folk music and even some of the classical stuff, like a lot of, you know, this is a very broad generalization, but a lot of like Middle Eastern music is an oral tradition, especially the folk stuff. And so there is no sheet music for it. And so you would just have someone like transcribe it. And then like the lyrics, they'd write it. But like besides like Library of Congress, there's no real official transliteration of Arabic or Farsi like there is for like Chinese and Japanese. And so the way you transliterate it into like English and like Roman characters is different depending on who you're talking to.
Wait, can I be an ass for a second and ask which Chinese dialect?
Oh, I don't. I mean, Mandarin? I don't know, but like how there's like the pinyin and stuff, yeah, how there's like the official like...
I was just going to be an ass and be like, Cantonese or Mandarin or another dialect?
Yeah.
Because Chinese isn't a language.
But with Arabic, yeah, because there's Arabic, but there's also Farsi, which uses the almost the same alphabet. And then I think, is it Urdu that also uses a very similar alphabet? I don't know. But yeah, it was a fun time trying to read that sheet music. Fun time. Anyway, fair use. I all of these links you have in the notes, Justin, one of these I dropped in the chat. I see some interesting things in here about like copyright bad.
Copyright complicated.
Because I am actually like, for an anarchist, I'm actually quite a fan of copyright. It's just the way that we tend to use it and have it enforced that is the problem. And like, I know like the concept of like intellectual properties makes
rather
me a bad
than saying use, perhaps maybe we should say copyright gets abused.
Yeah, because it's like its original intention is more for like to protect people who were, you know, sort of pushing like scientific discovery and also just like writing and art and stuff, so that they could safely go on and do other things and not have their like livelihood taken away. You know, like the problem here is capitalism, as always. And then it was like fucking Disney.
Fuck Disney.
Fucking Disney had to go
God
ruin everything.
Damn mouse.
Because it was like working fine.
Yeah.
Well, it's also funny because the United States was a massive pirate nation for a century before we signed on to the Berne Convention.
Yeah. But
Berne.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, at its heart, and like most of copyright law is actually the exemptions to copyright law. It's like, okay, here's copyright. Now here's all the shit that you can do that is technically like is limits the copyright of others. Like a lot of it is for like the library and cultural institutions stuff. Like the huge chunk of copyright law is the exemptions of it. So most of copyright law is telling you how to break copyright.
Or just how to make it keep working. Well, what I always tell faculty at the very beginning of faculty trainings is that I don't like copyright because I'm not the copyright police. A lot of people think like, oh, you're a librarian, you must like respect intellectual property. I'm like, no, I got into this through software piracy. That was my track to learning about copyright was like massive amounts of piracy.
Yeah, I'm always like, no,
I'm a fan of piracy.
Yeah, I'm always like, no, I steal a lot of shit. Please edit that out. But I'm always going to
play orchestral music behind it.
Yeah, just like
play Sublime behind it.
Please,
since we're being cops,
just like play a lot of horn music.
Oh, hang on,
Mighty
I got
Mighty
some,
Boss
I can...
tones that actually. But I mean, like. Am I in the red room? Am I in the black lodge right now?
Where we come from, the birds sing a pretty song.
That gum you like is back in style.
Oh,
Oh, it's Scatman John!
Is Scatman slowed 400%?
Yeah, like, even Lynch have what hole are we in right now? That scene in fucking Lost Highway where they walk into like the hardcore porn playing and it's just Rammstein just blaring.
It's, oh, that's such
fun. Did you know, Rammstein aside, did you know that the Rammstein box set that was released about a decade ago came with like dildos?
What? They're good boys. God bless them.
Yeah, one of my I have a friend who's like a secret Rammstein head, like would not suspect it. He's just like a very mild-mannered Chicago boy. And he's just like, yeah, I really love Rammstein.
I would listen to them and Neubauten on the days I had German tests. Yeah. Just like put on Halbermansch, like,
yeah.
So that's Eisenstudenten Neubauten.
That is a concert that I missed because of the pandemic.
No.
Yeah, they were supposed to come to Chicago, and me and my noise friends were gonna go down and see Eisenstudenten Neubauten. Missed it. And I think it was gonna be a good show. But anyway, where are we going?
Oomph is the superior industrial German band.
Yeah.
It's my opinion.
I mean, you got your pick of the litter there.
Yeah, you do.
You really got a wide range of bands to choose from, but
Kraftwerk, I mean, they're not noise, but they have a very interesting copyright case that's actually similar to the NWA Parliament Funkadelic case that was in the US.
Oh, please.
Yeah, I had to write a paper on it in grad school because we had to write a paper about a copyright case we disagreed with. And I did it's not Bridgeport, it's the Something Dimensions Inc., but it's, you know, on behalf of Parliament Funkadelic versus NWA for one of their songs that sampled like a 2-second bass line or something. And NWA lost, which got rid of like the de minimis defense. And I was like, you know, this is a bad look. And there's a similar case involving Kraftwerk in Germany, because like international copyright law is like it's a doozy. But yeah, it was like the same exact thing happened where Kraftwerk sued someone for using their music.
Oh,
I think it was like, and not the other
metal
way.
Metal
on metal. Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. It's been a few years since I've read it. But yeah, I was like, Kraftwerk, don't do this to me.
Yeah, from Trans Europe Express. Mm-hmm. And they sued Sabrina Setlur for her song Nur Mir, which
only for me or something.
I don't speak German.
I took 2 years in college.
I do Spanish. Yeah.
Public Enemy has a good song that I always want to put in my copyright presentations, but I don't think I can get away with it. But yeah, Caught, Can I Get a Witness? It's just all about how you can't copyright a beat.
Oh, nice.
I think it was a response to the NWA case.
Probably. That would make sense.
So my favorite music copyright case is when Radiohead settled out of court when the Hollies sued them for stealing the chord progression from The Air That I Breathe because it's very similar to the chord progression in Creep.
But you can't... It's a chord progression.
Exactly.
That you can't copyright a chord progression.
And that's the problem with the Blurred Lines case.
Exactly. Yeah. The Blurred Lines case is
a very similar bad case.
Yeah. The Blurred Lines Marvin Gaye one, that's one that even though like, and I think this is where we can really dig deep into like the music copyright stuff, is that like, because it was like, you know, unintentionally inspired by a Marvin Gaye song. Like, that was such bullshit. Like, even though What's His Nuts fucking sucks.
Yeah. It's like he shouldn't have lost that case.
There's no
just because he sucks it. Doesn't mean he should have lost.
And I think this is where like the law shouldn't be weighing in on what is or isn't creative.
Yes. Yeah, especially because like with like, art and music cases, because with like with other things it's a little, I wouldn't say it's always clear cut, but it's easier. Especially for non professionals
for textual
in the area.
yeah
for but textual with like,
based stuff,
yeah, with like art, especially you remember like the guy who did the art where he's like he took pictures of I think of indigenous people in Australia, but I might be wrong, and then put like guitars and stuff on them. Like imagine if he got sued for that, and like would a judge know what to do with that, because that's totally fair use.
No, he did get sued.
Did he get sued?
And settled out of course. No, well, the thing was, they weren't his photos.
He didn't take the photos, and then he put the guitars on them.
Yeah, he said the value in the market comes from my signature being on it.
Ooh.
And that's why it's not impacting the market, because this person could never have sold them for millions of dollars to rich idiots.
Oh my God. But yeah, it's like with music, especially because there are so many like factors to music. It's like they always have to have some sort of professional come in to be the person to weigh in on it. But yeah, music, it's sort of always like a crapshoot depending on what judge you get.
That's why I somehow end up following a lot of lawyers on Twitter. I really didn't do that on purpose, but usually it's like copyright lawyers. And they're talking about like the Google versus Oracle case. And I just put like the Alien versus Predator poster. It's like, whoever wins, we lose. And they're like, yeah. Well, I don't think that's actually the case. I'm like, no, every case is potential precedent. Like, you could get a really fucked ruling that will just be a pain in the ass for everyone.
Yeah, for like decades. No case is just the case itself. It's always, well, how is this going to affect some case 20 years from now?
Yeah, it would be better if the Blurred Lines case had just been thrown out and the judge said, deal with this yourself. Like, this is a creative dispute.
Yeah. Okay, another thing from the EFF report is apparently in January of last year, NYU Law School posted a video of a panel about the Blurred Lines case. And it was moderated. It featured the music experts from opposite sides of the lawsuit. So music experts who weighed on opposite sides. And the whole point of the panel was to show how experts analyze songs for copyright, and YouTube flagged it. Yep.
What I see a lot of people laugh at, and then I'm actually like, actually. But a lot of videos of performances of 433
get
flagged on YouTube. They do get flagged.
Yeah, and a lot of people are like, but this is a song that doesn't have any music. I'm like, well, actually, the whole point of 433 is to make you recontextualize what noise is happening into music. And so it's different every time. So technically, every performance of 433 is a unique thing. So technically, yeah. But yeah, a lot of people.
What if you have to get a mechanical license for 433?
Yeah.
To perform it live.
Yeah. But yeah, so like a lot of people are like, well, how is this? Can be a DMCA takedown if there's not actually any creative thing, copyrightable thing happening here. And it's like, ooh, is the performance what's copyrightable?
Yeah, someone must have had to tag it, because if it was just listening for every video that had silence in it, it would flag everything. So someone must have reported it.
Yeah. So I always find those DMCA, because people like to laugh at 433. I'm like, actually, John Cage is good, actually.
John Cage is good aside from 433, and that's my unpopular opinion for the day.
I like that him and Merce Cunningham were a thing, because I like Merce Cunningham as a choreographer.
Yes. Yeah.
And they like, he like wrote music for Merce's. Like,
I really hate that like 433 is John Cage's most popular thing, just because he has
a lot of better shit.
Yeah, he has way better shit.
Yeah. I really liked his folk punk phase.
Who doesn't?
Exactly, who doesn't?
Yeah, I'm just like that annoying new music person.
I don't know, like all the music I listen to now is just sad women with guitars and just
honestly
talking about,
actually, yeah. Like I was someone, I think it was Carolyn Pendleton, posted a playlist that was like what is it, period rock. And it was like sad women
just
with guitars.
Kill.
No, it was sad women with guitars from the 90s. It was like Paula Cole and Joan Osborne and Sophie B. Hawkins.
God.
It was so perfect.
See, I just listen to like Dark Wave, and then like I'll get in the shower and like put on Floodland. And then when I'm like feeling myself, I'll like put on some opera. And that's like all I do these days.
Yeah. I've been putting my iTunes on shuffle. I got a really big iTunes library, so I just shuffle it around.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, it's been fun.
That's
been
dangerous to do during sex, because then you get the Power Rangers theme right at the.
Yeah,
that's why you make a dedicated
victory theme. Like,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, you gotta do. Yeah, you need to have like I have one called Sexual Congress, and that's my fuck jams playlist. Which, you know, not having sex these days, but
I have a like
a girl can dream.
You gotta be ready.
Sex. Ooh. Playlist, and then I'm like, I need to make a fuck.
I just put on the X-Files, honestly.
I just like put on like new thing makes you hornier. Genius. Yeah.
It just turns out that Carrie was in the Bloodhound gang and wrote that line that you could fuck while you watch X-Files.
Actually, I'm Siskel and I'm Ebert and I give you 2 thumbs up. That's the line I wrote.
It was a cultural reset. So good.
I loved that song.
I did too.
I like did dances at sleepovers to that song was how much I loved that song.
Good. I approve.
What is the fair use on doing dances at sleepovers to songs?
Because fucking Mambo Number 5. How many did
I never did that.
Because like I was like a kindergartner, first grader when that song came out, and in my newsflash, I used to be a lady person. And I remember I felt cool because my name was in the Mambo Number 5 list. And so I was like, oh, I'm cool because my name's in the Mambo Number 5 thing. And like I went over to a sleepover and like the girl whose sleepover it was and like her mom choreographed a dance to it and did it for all of us.
Oh, and that's copyrightable.
Like, well, my name's in it and hers isn't. So.
I would have never shown up to that person's house again. If someone's like mom a very lonely, was like
abused child and then wanted to like have a friend. So
yeah, I'm sorry you went through that. If someone else was like, you're gonna learn a dance, I would have been like, fuck you, I'm going home. I want to play with the limits of space and time at this sleepover, and you're not. Like, I don't want mom intervention. Mom, stay upstairs.
Yeah.
That's sleepover. The pickle in my
mouth. Hey, man.
Yeah, I was like, okay, so I was like a good kid at school, but a bad kid all other times.
That could be your angle or your devil.
Are we hanging out with a bad kid?
Yeah, I was secret bad kid. So yeah, when people invited me over for sleepovers, that's when they found out I was a bad kid. Who stayed up all night and like wanted to sneak out of the house and shit.
You break out the cloves and the Black and Milds.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
The best joke South Park ever did was when they had the goth kid tell Cartman how to dance. And it's like, you like, you know, bob back and forth looking sad. And then like every other like bob, you like take a drag off your clove or something. I'm like, yep, that's how you dance in a goth clove.
That's how the goths do.
But yeah, I was the kid who was like showing up with Bloodhound Gang CDs and sneaking out of the house and staying up all night.
Yeah, I didn't really start smoking and drinking till I was 18.
I drank a little bit when I was 17.
I didn't really drink either. I think it's because my mom's whole family was alcoholics though, so
I never really had the desire to. Yeah. And now I have wine with me right now.
I just stole things, like intellectual property.
I was a goody two shoes, except I was poor, and so my dad taught me how to use like BitTorrent and uTorrent and just torrent things, and so that I could get movies and music.
Do you want to tie this back to libraries?
Please.
Me and my mom were fiends for going to the library CD section and ripping that shit the fuck up.
I did that when I worked in the music library in undergrad.
Yeah.
Most of my music library.
My mom and I were doing that like as soon as the library had CDs.
I didn't realize that was illegal when I was doing it. I would just like use my laptop to my work shift and be like, I'm going to check out this Diamond Galas CD and then rip it to my laptop. No.
We had 2 VCRs. We were ripping videotapes from the library to other videotapes.
Well, now you have like DRM, and so now we don't actually own anything. We license it basically as long as we follow the rules. Which, fun fact to bring it back to EFF, the Archive of Our Own People, Organization for Transformative Works, worked with EFF to have it so if you're doing like fan vids and whatnot, you can legally remove the DRM from a DVD or something in order to use that footage in your fan video because it's a transformative use. Because normally it's illegal to remove DRM from stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was
that's the problem with DMCA is it doesn't matter if you're doing a fair use. And I have to explain this to faculty as well. It doesn't matter if it's a fair use. It matters that you broke the encryption because of the anti-circumvention provision.
And then now people use DMCA takedowns in really bad faith as intimidation. Yeah, it's terrible. That happened to my friend, actually, not just like the Lindsay Ellis thing, but that happened to my friend because she like messaged me and be like, hey, am I actually breaking copyright law? I got a DMCA takedown for this like cross stitch pattern I put on up on Etsy because this like other creator was saying that I infringed on their design. Because my friend was making like little cross stitch patterns of like, because she's a queer chemist. And so she was doing like the periodic table of elements, but like, you know, bismuth is bi, right? And so like doing that kind of,
yeah.
Like that shit's not new. No. And then this person gave a DMCA takedown because they came up with like the queer periodic table Etsy store or something. And then I like went through this person's
shit. Oh, eat my ass over
there. I was like, yeah. Yeah, I was like, you're fine, Natalie, I promise.
Yeah, also you can't copyright an idea.
Exactly, you can't copyright an idea, and like they didn't have the same designs and stuff. There's only so many ways you could do a pride flag on a like square with some letters in it.
Yeah, eat my ass on that bullying nonsense.
Yeah.
If there's no minimum creativity in the work as well, you can't copyright it. So the person might not even have copyright over the...
Right, and it's like with copyright enforcement now, so much of it is just a intimidation thing. Like, I'm just like convinced all of the stuff that like libraries do because we're overly cautious because we don't want to get sued because we don't have the money and don't want to like make waves. Like all of the percentage shit, all of like the DMCA takedowns, like all that stuff. It's like copyright at this point is only meant to bully and to make sure people like don't actually use their fair use rights, like because that's what they're there for, is to like, oh hey, we can actually do shit with this. And then there's all these like, yeah, no, I just, that's like all I see copyright used for now is sort of bad faith intimidation and bullying.
Mm-hmm. And it's also very hard to get an exemption from the DMCA if you're not like a cultural heritage institution. So if you're doing something yourself,
yeah,
it's going to be, you really can't do it. But so many licensing things are just so absolutely crazy. Like I was working on transforming a theater class, and so they needed productions of stage plays. And so those aren't, you know, those are pretty few and far between.
Yeah.
A lot of them are completely impossible to get. So I was trying to get the War Horse that the National Theater did. And the only place that even claimed it might have the DVD was in Pakistan. They did not accept any electronic forms of payment. So the DVD was out. And so I went to their streaming and they said, we don't stream outside of the UK, so you can't even buy it. So there's no effect on the market. But,
yeah.
You know, and I had to pay library had to pay $120 for a Sondheim DVD production of Company because that was the only way we could get it. And, yeah. And then we had to use fair use and the Teach Act, which is something I would have gone into more if Kyle was here.
Hold on a second. I mean, couldn't these problems just be solved if like faculty just didn't want things?
Well, yeah. But this was a theater course and it was like a production design course.
They wanted to show the mechanical course. Can you just choose something different, like less hard?
Yeah, well, all customer service, it's customer service is best when there are no customers, right?
Right.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to eat your ass for this one.
I actually, there was like a really cool presentation I went to at a conference. I don't remember which one, I've slept since then, of this university that talked about like, what do you do when the only copy of something that you can find, because you can't buy it anywhere, is a pirated copy online, and that's the only version you can find anywhere, and it's like, you need it for a course or something. It's like, what do you do ethically and copyrightably legal? It's like, well, I can't get it anywhere else, so technically. And so what they did is they would like download them, like rip them, and then like put them on like a protected server just for the classes. Mm-hmm. But they were like, you know, if people get mad, they get mad, but what else are we supposed to do? And then I went to the, because I did a project with some, with my Emerging Leaders project was with the American Indian Library Association. And we presented our poster at like the Tribal College Librarians Institute. And one of the presenters there was the librarian at the college that was nearest to, I can't remember the name of the college, nearest to where the like Dakota Access Pipeline protests were happening, and that was like one of the closest buildings
Standing
with internet.
Rock.
Yeah, yes, one of the closest buildings to that. And so, what he did and like all had like the librarians do, where they would collect posters and stuff, but also they would scour the internet for all the memes and stuff and save those like digitally as like a way of preserving this moment. And he's like, there's no way to find out who originally made this, you know, photo thing or this meme. So technically, like, am I allowed to put this on this presentation? I don't care. This needs to be shown. And if someone wants to sue me, they can sue me. But for right now, it's like, who's gonna? So he's like, no one's gonna sue me for this. And it's like, I can't find who the original person was. And this is important. So I'm just gonna show it. And I was like, good for you, dude. And I just like thought it was like an interesting thing of like, you know, instead of erring on the side of caution, erring on the side of who's gonna get mad. What can you do about it?
Yeah.
Enforcement is the whole of the law. I got a question in my faculty copyright because I was using like some interactive stuff and it said, how do I avoid going to prison? I said, the easiest way is don't get caught. And I tell faculty, like, if you're going to break copyright, just don't tell me about it. Like, yeah. I don't need to know. Yeah. I'm not the police.
Librarians aren't the copyright. Yeah.
I'll be like, yes, give your students the PDF so they don't have to buy shit. Do it. I don't care. But, you know, I can't leave.
Yeah. Well, I say if you're going to do it, don't tell me.
Yeah, don't tell me.
And the thing is, I was in a fair use week. I think this was the same one. It was the game show one. Mm-hmm. And they were asking if it's fair use. And I said, well, you know, I work for Texas. And so technically, I would have sovereign immunity. And they're like, no, you have qualified immunity because you're an employee. And I'm like, oh, that's the shit cops get so they can kill people. Like, that's awesome. So I can just like, I can get like...
The only,
like
good
a,
cop
a,
shit?
Only good cop shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say something else, but I forgot. Maybe I'll remember. Who knows? Not me. All this, you know, too, will be lost in time. Like Tears in the Rain.
Like Tears in Rain.
This is such a good
I've seen memes you couldn't believe.
Oh, no, I remember. It was based on your theater thing. So at the music library I worked at in undergrad, we actually had a lot of laser discs. Because that would be like the only format some operas had ever been published on, like live performances. And so we had to like rip the operas from the laser discs and like put them on like a protected like Google Drive that like you couldn't download it from. Like you only had like view privileges. And then like that is what we would give to classes so that they couldn't download it and only the people in like, and not just a link, like you had to invite people to it. Because there was literally no other way to get that recorded live performance of that opera.
Yeah, theater is the fucking worst in terms
really
of making
weird,
stuff
yeah.
accessible.
Yeah, it's like you kind of just have to fuck around with it. Yeah.
And I think stable archiving is, you know, one of those other problems that you'll see a lot with fair use questions and also with copyright questions that I've... And I think this is where, I guess, my background comes in because... This is how I learned about copyright was through archives, which I don't do now, but that's where I received my education in, was in audiovisual archiving.
Nice.
So that's how I know most of what I know about fair use and archiving. And like, so making preservation copies mm-hmm. is like a big part of that. And so like, what do you do with outdated media?
Yeah.
And things like that. So like when I did work in an audiovisual it was an audiovisual archive, and I one of the first collections I worked on there was a collection that had been transferred from U-Matic tapes, which are big smelly. Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was a public access television show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, called I can't remember what it was called, but it was this lady named Ruth.
WFMU.
No, if only. Yeah. No, it was like a television show dedicated to like local jazz. And it was made in the 80s, and it's this lady named Ruth, and she was like an old jazz singer. And anyway, it was like they had just transferred everything from U-Matic tapes to DVDs. And so I did all the finding aids for him anyway. But like, we had to make the DVDs to be preservation copies because we didn't have technology to play the U-Matic tapes, even though the U-Matic tapes were a more stable archival format. So like, you get into those kinds of issues with copyright and preservation, right? So like, you almost kind of have to constantly evolve your format to some extent for playability. So that was like one of the big issues that we ran into with audiovisual archiving is that playability is a major problem. And I mean, these were never used in classes or anything, but it was like something that money was there for and the family had given money to make these tapes or make these tapes transferred to DVD so that, and I think that the archive also owned copyright to them. That was the other factor that was at play, but it was a thing, you know, so.
The joke that I was going to make was not WFMU, it was UCF.
Oh, UHF. UHF,
that's what it is.
We got it all. Another Weird Al reference.
Yeah, my our acronym.
We got it all on UHF. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was no Conan the Librarian, but it was along the lines of The Wonderful World of Phlegm.
I kind of want to stir shit and be like, let me simp for the Internet Archive for...
gladly simp for the Internet Archive because they have porn on there.
Hell yeah. Good for them. No, I'm like such a like fuck the police about this lawsuit that they're in. I'm like authors are cops now. I'm like every single author who like Neil Gaiman. I'm like, I hate you now.
I think I always think Neil Gaiman has been
he's
a cop.
So weird. Yeah. Like he's
I don't
like one of my
think
favorite
he's
authors.
That good.
I like his short stories a lot.
He's
and like
fine.
Sandman is good.
No, and, like, Sandman's a fucking ripoff.
I mean, that is the point. Anyway.
He should be sued for that anyway.
Yeah, but
or
like,
no,
yeah.
Not Sandman, Stardust.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like Sorry. The movie because Robert De Niro is like a gay pirate named Captain Shakespeare. And that was very important to impressionable young me.
Yeah, that's not in the book.
It's not, no, because I've read the book. I was like, where's fucking gay Robert De Niro in this?
I was really disappointed when I read
no
the book.
There is no character in that book called gay Robert De Niro, unfortunately.
There should be more books with a character named gay Robert De Niro in it.
He's
I mean, let's...
Strange. You know, he could do Taxi Driver and then go be gay Robert, you know, gay pirates in Stardust. You know.
Can I just say that I am so horned for Robert De Niro in Taxi Driver.
Right. The movie changed my life. I had never seen it before until like a few months ago. And I was like, oh, I get it now.
Oh, my God. No, so I like that was another movie I was obsessed with in college. I also love Sybil Shepherd in that movie.
Oh, God, she's great.
Yeah, I'm in love with her in that movie, too.
Yeah. So where do we all stand on the Internet Archive?
Anyway,
lawsuit.
Yeah, fuck Neil Gaiman, Internet Archive simping because they have porn and also they have really good old medical texts on there.
They also, I was retweeting some stuff earlier. They have like all these like old like vinyl record LPs on there, and like there's even like some like weird obscure radio station that just plays them all.
Yes. Yeah. I think I will simp for Internet. I know some of the people involved with it are problematic. I'm not here for them, but I overall support the project of what the Internet Archive aims to be.
Especially the Wayback Machine is like crucial
Definitely.
In law, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, like when people were getting so mad about the like controlled digital lending, because like normally publishers hate it anyway, but it's like, well, only one person's getting it at a time. It's fine. And I'm like, well, no, technically the licenses work differently in academic libraries than they do public libraries, because I can buy something that has unlimited uses and you can download it, but whatever. Apparently people think that only things work like they do in public libraries, but what do I know? But also it's like, well, if you didn't buy the license for this at all, it's bad. And it's like with the controlled digital lending, with them making it so more than one person could use one copy at a time. I'm like, well, the only reason we have that rule is because you cannot give one physical item to more than one person at a time. And so like literally we just had that rule because like physically you can't check out the same physical one item to like two people at the same time. But when you remove that in a digital context, then what's the fucking problem? It's still like DRM'd, like it'll stop working after 2 weeks. Like, I guess I don't get it. Now, there are other countries I know in England and in Canada, authors actually do get royalties based on library circulation. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't that still count as circulation for the Internet Archive? That's a library.
Probably in Canada, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, it's like, you know, they bought a copy of the book, but I'm like, does it necessarily have to be every copy they buy, or does it have to be we have your work in here and it's circulated?
It's based on circulation, I think.
Yeah, but like, is it... like if the Internet Archive didn't buy the books, if they were like donated or whatever, if they didn't get it through a license, would that still count?
Yeah, I don't know how it works in Canada.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's why there needs to be some sort of digital right of digital first sale, right?
Yes, like that's the whole fucking that's what libraries work is for sale.
Exactly, that's the whole basis. And I had to have this discussion a couple of times on like class discussion boards, because people often assumed that fair use was why public libraries could just, you know, do what they do and check out materials and stuff. They're like, oh yeah, it's fair use. And I'm like, it's actually not at all what fair use is. And it's the right of, you know, the right of first sale. Which
we couldn't have used bookstores with that right of first sale.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, no.
Yeah. It's the principle of exhaustion. So if you sell something, you can't control it afterwards.
Right. Exactly. And so I don't know, like all the authors that were like weaponizing, like, oh, well, you're taking money away from like authors of color who don't have money. And then I see like all of these authors of color being like, I'm an anarchist, please steal my books. Like on Twitter being like, don't use me as a scapegoat. Like,
but you know, I am mad at the Internet Archive for the CDL case, because like we said before, because they did something stupid and they're insisting that this is controlled digital lending, which it's not.
Sorry. Can you clarify that acronym? Because in my mind, a CDL is a commercial driver's license.
Yeah.
The controlled digital lending. Because for the National Emergency Library, because their normal model is you can like, they treat the digital copy as a physical copy kind of, where it's like, because they own an physical version of this book, they have digital version, and that gets lent out to an person at a time for like 2 weeks, I think it is. And then it's, you know, returned. It stops working on that person's computer using like the Adobe editions or whatever.
Yeah, Adobe editions.
Yeah, and then the National Emergency Library removed the number that could be checked out at a time. It still had the 2 week limit, but there was no limit to how many people could have it out at a time because we were in a fucking pandemic and libraries were closed.
Yeah, but the thing that annoys me is information, because am I muted?
Or I lost
my voice mod probably just freaked out because I just got a thing that said I was out. But anyway, they're basically spreading disinformation because they're saying this is controlled digital lending, and people are like parroting that to me on Twitter now. And I'm like, no, controlled digital lending is not just that it's controlled. It's controlled in a one single specific way. So yes, it is still controlled, but it's not controlled digital lending.
It's not the CDL model.
PM. Yeah. Right. And the reason this annoys me so much is they did something basically kind of stupid but they're insisting on calling it CDL. And like we said earlier, you never know how a court case is going to turn out. This could ruin controlled digital lending for everyone else just because, you know, they made a hasty decision, which was made for good reasons, but like, they weren't wrong, but like, you know, it's copyright already sucks enough. If we get a bad ruling on this, it will suck more.
The main criticism I've seen from it from other copyright people whose opinions I tend to agree with is that like what they did wasn't wrong, but that because it most people would view it as wrong and it's risky, the fact that it got it into court is dangerous. Because
right, that is the danger.
Oh, I see. Yeah. They took it too far.
I haven't been following this very much, even though I like know what you guys are talking about in general. But like, is part of it that if they're not actually doing controlled digital lending, but it's gotten a bunch of media thing, this is what everybody's going to think controlled digital lending is instead of what it actually is?
Yeah, but that's just annoying. It's not dangerous.
If they lose the case.
If they lose, it's dangerous. And if you get a weird ruling. But I mean, I'm just annoyed that people now are conflating controlled digital lending with any type of control, which is like,
see, I didn't know there was a difference. I learned something today, the more you know, because I'm not a scholarly communications librarian. Like, I'm like, yeah, copyright law. And I knew that, like, you know, the controlled digital lending thing was like, oh, you know, it's like overdrive books or whatever, like one digital copy per person. But I thought that was just like the rule that we, you know, I didn't know it was like a specific system.
Yeah, it was hammered out by like a lot of legal scholars, and that's why people were feeling confident to do it. So now if I want to do CDL at my university, like there's pending litigation. Like I might not be able to make any progress on this, which is really annoying to me now, because like I would like to do controlled digital lending for like rare books and special collections, things that like won't circulate anyway because they'll sit in special collections. So we can just loan out as many digital copies as we, you know, one at a time, but we can loan them out indefinitely with no wear and tear. People don't have to come to the library, which is great during COVID. And like, it's hard to implement, but like, you know, because you've got to put the DRM on it, you've got to set up the permissions. I've seen people do it in Alma. But the thing that keeps annoying me about the Internet Archive is the guy who's like the head of the Open Library keeps showing up in all the CDL meetings to like say, by the way, we're still being sued and it's really unfair to us. And it's like, I'm not here to listen to you like convince me about this anymore. Like, I came to this meeting because someone's going to show how to do CDL in Alma. Like, that's why I'm in this meeting. I don't need you to like talk 20 minutes every fucking meeting about how like you're being sued and it's very mean.
Yeah.
So, I'm just personally annoyed as well about this.
Yeah. It's more of an annoyance thing. But yeah, also the thing that this lawsuit has taught me, because it made me research more into the Google Books HathiTrust, as well as the Authors Guild HathiTrust and Authors Guild Google Books. And that basically the Authors Guild are just cops.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, they just hate everything. Because like, it made me realize that authors don't know shit about copyright, and that when they say we love libraries, they don't actually know what they're talking about either. They have this very narrow, it's like, you know, have one as a keynote speaker and you'll see.
Oh yeah.
But it's like, authors are like, it's sort of like, because they work in this certain realm, they think they know what it means. It's like, no, you don't actually.
The biggest cops are the Association of American Publishers. Like, I tend to view the Authors Guild a little better. Maria Palante, come at me. You embezzled millions of dollars from the Copyright Office. Fuck you.
Ooh.
I've been trying to start this beef with Maria Palante for years. I've like published throw about down. Like how yeah, like one of my ACRL chapters.
Pub. Yeah.
Are you throwing down a gauntlet right now? Are you challenging Maria Palante to a duel?
Are you throwing
I threw
down
it down
glove?
Like 4 years ago when I published a chapter saying she sucks.
Do you bite your thumb at me, sir?
Justin, do you demand satisfaction?
I demand attention.
I guess that's a good point, though. It's like when we do litigation and when we do things, it's like, it kind of goes back to the music thing earlier where it's like, it's never about that one case. It's always about the precedent that it's setting up.
Yeah.
So it's like when you were going to do something risky, even though you're like, yeah, I know I'm right. Even if you know, are fucking up what language you're using, still the thing you're doing is fine. But it's like, do you have to think about, like, is it sort of the thing where it's like, we know this will make us look bad or have bad repercussions, so we shouldn't do it, kind of thing? Like, is that a thing we have to focus on primarily now instead of the actual thing we're doing?
I think if you're a big organization like Internet Archive, you should be aware of that because you're a big target.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if, you know, if I was doing controlled digital lending and turned off the one limit thing, like, no one would notice that my university was doing that. Like,
but like, your university would probably get mad at you because they don't want to get sued. And so like, a lot of universities are very conservative.
Well, they don't understand copyright.
Universities don't have a lot of money to get sued with.
Exactly.
Unless you have it. And even then, they don't like the publicity of getting sued.
I wrote my university's copyright policy. That's how unqualified everyone at this university is about copyright.
Yeah, like
I don't have a JD.
It's like all of the librarians in my university, like, we're all like, fuck the police about copyright, and are like very, like, I actually work with some really cool people, but it's like the main like legal people at the upper levels of the university that have the very conservative view. Cause like, we were, for like, especially like pandemic stuff, we were wanting to do a lot more like with like course reserves and whatnot, and like lending out of books and stuff just to make it safer. We were all like, well, safely we could do it this way, this way, this way. But, you know, do people who don't actually know copyright law or who are very conservative about it going to interpret this as infringement? And it's like, we were like pretty pleased at the, you know, legal counsel or whatever. And they were like, no, even though we're like, but we know we're right. They were just like, uh-uh.
Yeah, I'm so glad I don't have to worry about that shit. Like,
I'm not even like in the Skull Kong area.
Yeah,
I'm a lonely metadata librarian.
Yeah, I completely do not have to worry about that shit, and I'm so relieved. I mean, every now and then I get questions about video, and I'm like, yeah, sorry, you cannot show a full DVD in your class. Like, no, you can't show Murder Ball to your class. I'm sorry. Like, I do a lot on like adaptive, I have a lot of like. I don't know how to phrase this. I work with like mobility and like adaptive mobility usage. Anyway, and Murder Ball is like a great film about how adaptive mobility usage works. Anyway, And so I get requests to show Murder Ball, and I'm like, yeah, we don't have Murder Ball streaming, and you cannot show that online. And that's the end of the conversation. I'm like, you got to find something else.
You can, but it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing I ran into, kind of related to like, oh, can you stream this or whatever or not, is when I was making the like public perform, like when I worked at Utah, I made this like public performance rights like guide, because a lot of like students and teachers are like, well, can I, do I have to like pay or do something to show this in my class? It's like, no, actually a lot of the DVDs we buy with the rights. But on the guide, it was sort of like, when does it stop being some friends hanging out watching a movie together and turn into a screening without permission, right? Like, what's the number? And we like tried looking everywhere, and there's not really a number.
No,
of like, oh, what if?
And I think it's
like,
intention.
It's yeah, your immediate like, family, basically.
Yeah, it's like ours. It's like the one text we could find about it was like eights pushing it.
But the good thing about face to instruction is it's actually carved out in the copyright law. So
that's
like face to face, you can show it. And then because of the Teach Act, you can do equivalent face to face stuff online. But again, like, this is why we don't digitize DVDs. I still do it for faculty, but I've got a hard copy, the subtitles in for accessibility. And then I've got to sit there while it burns, which takes like 30 minutes to get a decent burn out of it. And then I've got to tell them to put it in Blackboard and make sure it's not just in Blackboard, it's also in Panopto with these settings. So it's just a pain in the ass. You can do it, but like, it would be easier just to like stream it through Zoom. But I think also most faculty aren't technically capable enough to do that.
Yeah, they don't know how to wire the audio, it's complicated. Instead of it just coming out of the laptop speakers.
It's complicated. And we actually have like a media and reserves librarian who's actually really good at this stuff. So I actually just defer most of our questions to her because she's pretty excellent at this stuff. So that's the nice thing about my job, is we have really capable people who actually I can defer these questions to. So like when people ask me, can I show Murder Ball in my class? I can say, talk to this person. They can perhaps help you. Like, it's going to be hard, but we might.
But being that person is also, I do wish sometimes other librarians in my library would learn about copyright.
Yeah, because it's like we can't function as libraries without copyright. So it always boggles my mind that most librarians don't have like at least a basic understanding. Because without the basic of at least fair use or something, that's how we get the like, well, 10%, 30%. I'm like, show me in the law where it says that.
Yeah, there's no hard and fast rule.
There's
about that.
Not. And so it's like, I wish more people had like copyright is, well, now that I work in like digital collections, I wasn't planning on it. But now that I do, it's like copyright's a little more relevant to me, but I still just do the metadata, right? Like, I'm not the person, I'm like, please put this rightstatement.org URI in this, and then that's all you need you to do. But I don't control what content it is, right? But I still took a copyright course in college when I was interested in it, but it's like, libraries don't work without the first sale doctrine. Like, half the shit that can happen in art or anything can't happen without fair use. I'm like, I should know a little bit about this, probably. And so now half the time it's like, in my small library, it's like, we have our Skullcom librarian who knows. And then like, I know. I'm not even like in her division, but it's like, oh, I know copyright things. And like, we just did the like copyright first responders little cohort together, and it was like great. And it's like, I'm a metadata person, but like, because I know copyright enough to be dangerous about it, it like, I don't know, I feel like I can like actually have these discussions that relate to my job and aren't directly my job. Right. And also as faculty, like, I have to liaison anyway. I'm a liaison to music, and so every once in a while I'll get like interesting questions. And like my department like rep is like, I feel bad asking you to buy books, because don't you just have to like rent them every year? I'm like, oh, you care. Oh, we're gonna use you. I love you. And we're like, no, actually, most of the individual ones you request, we just buy and then we own. But you know, but a lot of the stuff through us, yes, we have to pay for that every year. You should get very mad at it and yell at the, you know, your department for making you have certain things for promotion and tenure, and then yell at all of these like publishers and stuff. Stand behind us, help us.
I've gotten a department to send a letter to a publisher.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Whoa.
I'm wondering if I can maybe get music to do that. The music folk, they seem open to it. I like
yeah.
that.
Well, basically, they weren't licensing to the library, so we couldn't purchase any ebooks. And we kept getting requests once COVID hit for ebooks for stuff that had been on traditional course reserve. And so I said, well, they're just not, we have money set aside for this. We have a fund called the Textbook Affordability Fund, but like they don't sell to us. We can't do anything about it. And so, yeah, the whole department ended up getting together and sending them a letter. And then I talked to their rep, and I've also talked to McGraw-Hill's people.
Nice.
Because they sent me, they like cold called me. You know how like a vendor just bugs you? And I was like, actually, I have questions for you. I would like to talk to your library licensing people. And
That reminds me, our library is part of a consortia of across Washington State for Overdrive.
Oh.
And I think, I forget which publisher it was. I want to say Blackthorn, but they do audiobooks. But they pretty much said they're not going to sell audiobooks to libraries for like the first like 2 months.
What the hell?
Or something like that. This happened like a year ago.
Where are they getting all that money that they can afford to do that?
Right. Well, yeah. And, but our consortia boycotted them for 6 months. We were like, well, you won't sell it to us for 2 months, so we're going to wait a full 6 months before, you know, kind of thing. And I wish more people would do shit like that. Like, you want to get me started on ebooks? We could do a whole episode on that.
Especially from the public library perspective, with deals like Overdrive and stuff, those are like not good deals.
No,
God,
the DRM on that stuff is really, if I
look at the license, like I'm always like, probably, you know. But like when I look at the licenses that we have for our academic stuff, I'm like, I can just fucking download this book and keep it forever.
Like, yeah, because the academic licenses, like we pay for an unlimited, like for a lot of what we do, we try to pay for an unlimited license, mm-hmm. or we pay for a package or whatever, and it's kind of set it and forget it. But with a public package like Overdrive, which I think our university might be, you can edit this out, but I know that's something my university is potentially looking into right now as like a deal that we have through our system. That's something that scares me because I know what public libraries are being put through with Overdrive, and it's not cool.
I think that's why I tended to see public librarians being against what the Internet Archive was doing and academic librarians being like simping for it. Like it seemed like when I saw like the librarians going on the other side, it tended to be public librarians that were anti the National Emergency Library. And I think it's just because the licensing models that we're exposed to are so vastly different.
Oh, yeah. No,
but on the other side of that, like you can look at other products like streaming media, like say Canopy.
Yeah. New York Public Library had to get rid of it because it cost them too much money.
Well, and my mom has access through the Kansas City Public Library, and they have a token system because they don't have to pay for academic performance rights, which Canopy is bleeding academic libraries dry.
Yeah.
But they can set up different kinds of systems because they don't have to pay for academic performance rights for public libraries, right? So yeah, they set up different purchasing systems for public libraries than they have for academic libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, because like, can't you do like, there's like the DDA version of Canopy.
You can also put a cap on it.
Yeah, there's like a few different subscription models.
That's what we have set up. We have a cap system set up right now. Like it's we have a really complicated system with Canopy set up.
And the sad thing is like it's super popular with public library patrons. Yeah. Like, we have people actually asking us to get Canopy all of the time, and it's like we're this tiny rural system in the middle of nowhere.
There's
like,
no way.
We're like, and that's part of the reason why we're part of this like Overdrive, like Washington State consortia, is because it's like there was no way in hell that we were gonna be able to afford, you know, a decent ebook collection with our tiny little rural budget. So,
are you part of the Orbis Cascade?
No. Washington Anytime Library.
Okay, because I was about to totally like worship you because your documentation for Prima.
Yeah. Oh no,
Yeah, Orbis Cascade's legit. I knew someone who came out of Orbis, was at UNI and is now at Clemson.
Shout out, rep.
But it wasn't just Blackthorn Audio. Macmillan also did this with their ebooks.
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
Macmillan. Fuck Macmillan. I was so mad about that.
Yeah.
And I think they do a lot of like very popular romance titles, right? Wasn't that big thing that they were worried about?
And
because
like, what else do you use Overdrive for?
Right, that's all you get is smut.
Yeah.
I listen to audiobooks.
Ebooks are for porn. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to audiobooks when I have migraines, but you know,
like I own like hundreds of porny novels in this phone because of ebooks.
I just watch porn.
I mean, I do that too.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to read it, you know.
I don't, but anyway.
Well, that was the struggle during the blackout. I remember telling you guys about this, is I really should invest in some analog pornography because, like...
Yeah.
go buy some old magazines.
Oh, I just, yeah. I should go check some empty
logs. Isn't that what the Internet
Archive
is for, Carrie? Isn't that what you said?
Yeah, they have the porn? Internet Archive is great for porn.
Rewrite that Avenue Q song instead of Internet is for porn. It's the Internet Archive is for porn.
Yeah.
I could go get... like archived versions of Mega Boobs and whatever.
Yeah, Jugs magazine.
Wasn't it the Carrie? You might know about this too, because like Hugh Hefner went to University
UIUC,
of Illinois,
yes.
Right?
And my grandpa was there at the same time as him.
Right, and he like donated all his shit, and they like refused to do anything with it.
No, they have all of it in the special collections there.
Oh, okay. Because I remember there was like something about like they had all this like gay porn too that they didn't.
Oh yes. Special collections are full of gay porn.
Yeah, no, so I did my like graduate practicum at the Gerber Hart Library and Archives in Chicago in Rogers Park, which it's like down the road from the Leather Archives and Museum.
Yes,
shout
I
out
love
to
the
them.
Leather Archives.
Ugh, so good. But they're like a little like queer all donation, all volunteer, like grant funded library. And like their entire collection is queer stuff, and their archives and their special collections is so good. And they have this entire just like porn section, and it's like glorious in the back. I had to
and then
I got to like catalog like some softcore DVDs every once in a while. Like there
we
was,
should
like,
do
this...
an episode on that too.
I did a presentation about it. At
I can
OLAC.
Tell you about. I found a lot.
Scared
so
a bunch
I did
of
a whole. I did a completely unrelated to what I do now. My MLIS concentration is in rare books and manuscript studies. Completely irrelevant to my life now. But I did an exhibit catalog on LGBT comics. And
nice.
So I combed all of UIUC's collections, and I found a lot of very explicit gay comics.
Nice.
So yeah, I can tell you all about the explicit gay comics, including actually, I don't know if you know about Safer Sex Comics.
No.
Which were these tiny pamphlets which were used to promote public health and safer sex practices amongst gay men in New York City. They were
ones that Ricky Gervais did a stand-up bit about that was like, why not just come in his hair?
Maybe I don't like Ricky Gervais.
I know, fuck him.
Yeah.
I know, he's a piece of shit, but like that was
that's my Ricky Gervais.
But like that sounds exactly like what he was describing was
yeah, it's
like
kinda like that.
Kind of
like,
helpful but kind of weird.
Did you see stuff? Because the author who wrote the Bebo Brinker lesbian pulp novels went to UIUC.
A lot of
those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of lesbian pulp
I collect lesbian pulps.
Yeah, there are a lot of lesbian pulp
best
comics.
Covers.
They're great.
There was like a whole series of underground gay comics that they have bounded up in UIUC, both in their general collection and in their special collections.
I had heard that like they refused to touch it for years.
No, it's all over the place there.
Okay, who lied to me? How dare they?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we know where to go if we need gay porn all over the place.
Yeah,
I live
there.
Why didn't I not take advantage?
I know exactly where the fuck to find it, and I'm a straight person, so
I'm sorry.
Who doesn't like, you know, that's, you know, you have all these like children on Twitter right now and on Archive of Our Own being like, if you're a this, you can't jerk it to this. And I'm like, but two people of any variety having sex is hot and I want to watch it. So
yeah, exactly. I'm like, all about care. I'm all about people fucking however they want to fuck.
Yeah, them, it's not,
yeah, let's just fuck however, like, consensually.
It's hot. Yeah, only AFAB non-binary people can go to this meeting. It's like, you've just reinvented gender.
Women and non-binary people.
Yeah, well, no, it was non-binary, but like only, yeah, women and AFAB non-binary people. And it's like, well, yeah, that's so, just gender again.
So women light.
You just basically called me a woman. Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's woman light.
Somebody who falls under the AFAB non-binary label, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
All females are bastards.
Yeah. Also.
Is that the title of this episode?
Yeah. It is now.
Copyright or all females are bastards.
I like how far we wandered from fair use straight into gatekeeping and porn.
I'm just letting it go. Well, I was going to say, like, our gay porn collection sucked. I had my friend was. My friend was the one cataloging it, and he was like, this is just this guy's jerk collection. He's like, this is crap. He's like, because he was a gay man too, and he was like, which I suspect is why he got assigned it to catalog. But
I'm gonna catalog all the porn.
Yeah, I don't know if he asked for it. I think there was just some stereotyping going on there. But yeah, he was like, nah, this stuff sucks. It's not any good.
I searched, and my first result was an article called "Porn is for Masturbation." I'm like, yes, it is.
Are you in the Internet Archive?
Water is wet.
I'm on my libraries. I just want to see if we have.
Well, you don't search for porn when you're looking for porn. You type in what you like.
You type in. Well, yeah.
You're doing
you
it all wrong, full, Jay.
Yeah, come
you
on. Have
you
ever
type in the very specific full sentence in Pornhub?
Do I have to tell you how search algorithms work?
No, I want you to see if like we have any like our special collections or something.
Do I need to info lit some porn behaviors for you? Like,
that would be great.
What I'll learn is by making it relevant to my perverted desires. That's the only way I'll care.
Like, you need to Boolean string your desires. You need to frame your desires as a research question, Jay.
Can we please do an episode on like this and call it "You Need to Boolean Your Desires"? I just that needs to be a paper title or a book title or something. Like,
we should analyze the metadata of Pornhub.
Like a porn, yeah. So I'm friends with Brie Watson, and they are a sex historian.
Yes,
I'm really interested, and like
they're
we're
amazing.
Working on an article right now. We are together.
Love them.
We could totally have them as a guest. They're great. They were a librarian. Like, they were an intern at the Kinsey Institute Library at Indiana University. They've been on like Conan and stuff for their sex history work. Yeah, they published their master's thesis and got on Conan because of it.
Oh,
they were
so
on
cool.
an episode with Larry King.
You should link that to me. I'm interested.
They're cool. But we should totally have them as a guest and talk about porn. I would love that. I just love talking about porn, though.
I had a backyard party. Like, we had a backyard party with them and Cusap. Like, I was with them and Milo and Chris at Cusap.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah, like, I'm down the street from Cusap. And so we just, like, casually hang out in the backyard and go for walks and ride bikes and stuff all the time.
Yeah, me and Brie made out at a queerty.
Hell yeah, you did.
Queer librarians party at ALA.
I am not surprised. If there's anyone who you're going to make out with, it's Brie. Like,
yeah, of course it was.
I'm literally surprised.
And the zinester from the zine pavilion.
Yeah.
I was busy that night.
I'm glad.
That's what
the regular ALA orgy.
Yeah.
We should definitely talk about hookups at conferences.
Yeah, because I remember I always make that joke, but then I forgot that there's the, like, creepy dude who is just...
There's the creepy dude, yeah. Because I made a joke at ACRL because there was, like, some other con was going on, and they had a condom trough. And I was like, ideas for ALA 2021? And then Matt Murray was like, you probably shouldn't make that joke. There was
it's probably safe at the query librarians.
Because he's a very sweet man who is very conscientious of other people, and I am not. And so he always tells me, like, hey man, you should probably think this through.
Yeah, can we do a porn episode?
I would love to do a porn episode.
I just want to be perverted.
I could send you guys the purple pamphlet. That was a very interesting part of
Florida history.
Oh, I never
finished
Florida
telling
history.
You about safer sex comics, though.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
This is not porn. But yeah. It was a way of telling, it was like a way of educating gay men about safer sex practices during the height of the AIDS crisis in New York City. And they were created by the Gay Men's Health Crisis, which was Larry Kramer's, one of his organizations, which they used to promote public health. And they distributed them in bathhouses and public restrooms and subways throughout New York City as a way to, and they were comics. So they were really visual. They were erotic. So they were designed to promote, oh my God, Arthur is so cute. Sorry.
Like, look at him. He's so
cute. Yeah. Such a prince. Such a king. Anyway, but they were like, they were really great. And I say this as like someone who's like a huge public health nerd, but like there are really great means of communicating good public health practices and spreading public health information at a, you know, at a wide literacy level. And I just think it's like a really brilliant thing that I learned in the process of researching queer comics. So
awesome.
Also pretty hot if you're into that stuff.
I am.
Lots of pants bulges and
allusions. Like some Tom of Finland shit.
Oh, absolutely, Tom of Finland. Yes. I fucking love Tom of Finland.
I do too.
Have you seen the movie?
No, I want to though.
It's surprisingly good.
Oh, they have Tom of Finland has like a authorized like merchandise store.
Yeah,
it's fun to peruse. On an afternoon.
Is that the guy who can't like draw feet or something?
No, Tom of Finland was a like a gay erotic
fetish. Yeah,
porn
like
fetish.
Like basically kind of like basically
I'll drop it in the chat.
Kind of the originator of like the leather daddy stereotype.
Yes, exactly. We have
yeah, you'll recognize it if you saw it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like Orville Peck has a suit that's got some Tom of Finland dudes yeah. on it. I'm like, Orville Peck, we don't deserve you. So
I'm still not sure what Orville Peck is other than some fringe, but I'm into it.
Yeah. Gay cowboy. Into him. He did a cover of Fancy. And I was
by
like,
Reba?
It's not by her originally, but yeah. He did some gender with it too. I was like, oh.
Respect.
Yeah.
I mostly associate Fancy with Reba, so.
Yeah. Here's one chance, Fancy, don't let down. Oh, are we gonna get sued? Is that copyright infringement?
I think that's fair use.
And me singing Fancy.
I have a drop that's probably not fair use. I was just unironically jamming to that while I was putting it in the soundboard. Just called Cloud Screaming Man.
Oh. Is he screaming at the cloud or in the cloud?
Oh my God, yes. You've never seen it?
I don't know what it is. I see like pop culture.
I know the memes.
Mainstream yeah. pop culture blank space.
That's like the...
He's like an Australian singer or something. And but his own he's like it's his cameo in the song and that's all he does, but he's like superimposed into the skyline of like a desert.
Oh, I know the memes. Okay, it just came to me.
He looks so people usually will like replace it with a cat with a cowboy hat and
oh yeah, I've seen the cat with a cowboy hat with like singing like West Virginia or like
yeah, that's what it's making fun of.
Trains in the sky. I just thought that yeah. was like a funny cat meme.
I mean, it could be independent creation, but I think this is what it's referencing. But
I
yeah,
think it's
West
fine
Virginia.
West Virginia, country roads take me.
Did I use all my new drops? I don't know if I have. Oh yeah, I tried to use this earlier when I thought Jay was going to stop talking, and like I was just going to put this as like a response right after he pauses. It was just going to be,
dude, that's 144 eggs.
Oops.
But then the sentence went on. I tried to time it right, so I'll cut it out when it just the audio just goes over Jay for no reason. He's offended. You can't. This is an audio medium. You have to express your outrage.
I like that you're both amused and offended, by the fact that you've been called out.
Because I talk too much and I'm annoying.
No, I think that it's just
I didn't
that, like,
time it.
You just run. You just run. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. You've been very full of information this episode.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who doesn't, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
From introvert to extrovert.
Mm-hmm. I don't have that much shit to say. So, you know what? You're filling that space with shit that I don't know.
Before I learned how to, like, speak as, like, a normal human being, that was kind of my dating strategy, was to date someone who could do all the talking for me. So I never would have to talk.
Honestly, not a bad strategy.
Yeah. But then I had to learn how to be, like, a grown-up and actually talk like a normal person and inflect and do facial expressions.
Yeah, like, learning how to engage in conversation is really hard. And it, like, it took me a long time to learn that, too.
Yeah.
I still don't know how.
It has been suggested I'm on the spectrum, but, like, obviously not to a point where I've bothered to talk to my psychiatrist about it. But, like,
also, it'll change your insurance status if you are. So probably better if you don't get a diagnosis.
What the fuck?
I hate this. Yeah, we live in the worst world.
Diagnosis of what?
This is the worst timeline.
Yeah.
So any autism spectrum disorder.
Yeah, if you are diagnosed officially with an autism spectrum disorder, that can affect your insurance, and it could technically affect your ability to get health insurance.
Does ADHD count?
No.
Okay. Because I know it's still neurodivergency, and I wasn't sure.
That's also the part that I'm not sure about, because, like, I have been diagnosed with ADHD, so I'm like, maybe it's just, like, the weird parts of ADHD is why people think I'm on the spectrum. Because, again, like, I don't care if I am or not. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, it was very long process. Like, this is all skill, what you're seeing right now. Like, then I just, you know, took public speaking courses and stuff.
Nice. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
It's hard. I don't really know how to talk about this stuff, but I used to be good at it. And then I wasn't for a really long time because of social stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then through practice, I got better.
Yeah. I think depression can fuck it up, too. Like,
yeah, that's a lot of
untreated depression for a long time.
Hell, yep. Absolutely.
I have all of you, but it's very fun.
But anyway, it sounds like we're winding down.
Or
Jay's just disengaging because I said I was waiting for a pause in him to speak.
Jay, I want you to say that.
I have to be very self-conscious about that because I've had people, like, call me dominating before because of it, because I was just excited and loud.
There's a word for this. It's called, like, responsive engagement, which is why, like, when you say never talk over anyone, that's actually kind of culturally insensitive, because some cultures talk over people to show engagement.
That's why my best friend, like, never knew that I, like, that, because, like, his family's from New Jersey.
And especially,
especially
in Jewish cultures. I read an article about that.
I've been asked if I'm Jewish, actually.
Yeah, making noises and kind of talking over is, like, culturally acceptable. Interrupting.
Yeah, like, Japan does that, too. Like, if you're on the phone, you're just like, I'm listening. Like, basically, that's how you, like, respond to people on the phone, is you're constantly like, yep, yes, I'm listening. And that shows engagement, so it is kind of a weird thing when you see it in, like, stack discussions. It's like, be aware of who you're talking over. It's like, yeah, you should be, but also, like, that's not like a, like, recently my local DSA sent out a thing about, like, stacking in chats. And I was like, I know you didn't mean to phrase it this way, but it is kind of, like, not culturally competent for some people.
Like, that's also not a thing you can control all the time. I've tried on learning, like, not talking like this, and I just, like, can't.
Honestly,
I've even, like, and, like, the pauses in speech, I guess I registered, like, they can be really small. I'm like, oh, that means that person's done, because I honestly don't mean to interrupt people.
Oh, yeah, you see it as an opportunity, or I used to be a really bad interrupter, and people would, like, call me out on it. Like, I worked on when I was on a trail crew, it was something that, like, people found really frustrating. And because we were in such a tight environment, it was something that I became very aware of. So it was something that I became very conscious of working on. So it's just something that, like, you know, if you want to work on it, you will. If you don't want to work on it, it's fine. I don't mind because I'm prone to similar behaviors. So I'm fine and I appreciate your enthusiasm.
Yeah. The thing I do, because none of this comes naturally to me, is I've got it locked in what I'm going to say, but then someone else starts talking and I'm like, oh no, I can't stop saying this whole sentence I just thought out. And I just continue talking over someone and like realizing I'm doing it. And I'm like, oh no, I can't stop it. It's like, it's been planned and it's coming out now. And that's the one thing I have to be like very, that's the one thing I'm always like, why don't you just like listen to that part of your brain that's like you're talking over to someone? And I'm like, I don't know, just words are coming out. Oh no. I don't know how to stop. But no, it's good for podcasts.
No, I think it makes for a fun podcast energy for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh wait, one more drop I didn't use.
Librarians. Is that my rap?
Yeah.
Librarians.
Right at the drop. It just worked so good.
It's really good, actually.
I was going to ask, would we still have copyright? But I think that's in fully automated luxury gay space communism. But I think I'll save that for when we have a guest about copyright.
I think that's a good question for a guest.
Yeah, I do like that idea of like asking in an ideal world. Because eventually when we get to the library labor discussion, I'm just going to go, should there be librarians?
Yeah.
After the revolution, and we're gonna have to answer that.
Yeah, no, technically, like, especially with the, like, what do we call ourselves and credentialing, it's like I probably have some unpopular opinions about,
honestly,
that.
I just like want my robot body first.
I also want to have a robot body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can we make shape changing a thing? And
can I be in Ghost in the Shell?
Yeah,
let's prioritize that first.
Yeah
I would be probably, it would be really cool not having to like keep eating constantly. I would love like not have to think
actually,
about that again.
Yeah,
you know,
that
one
too.
One less thing, you know.
Yeah, if I could just,
I just
like
want to be existential.
Yeah, brain and jar life, glowing orb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have my consciousness uploaded to a coffee machine.
Be a weird androgynous hacker with no legs. Yeah. Called the Puppet Master.
I don't. Is that a Ghost in the Shell reference?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I've never been able to get through it.
The Puppet Master is a male voice, but is in the body of a female person who has no legs. It's just like disembodied torso with tits and blonde hair. Some gender happening. Gender happens in Ghost in the
that's
Shell.
That's a lot of gender.
Good.
That's a
no,
lot.
No, there's a
of
lot
gender.
Of gender in Ghost in the Shell. In the manga at the end, the major gets put into the body of an androgynous man, and in the movie, she gets put into the body of a young girl at the end. When her body gets destroyed. So there's gender happening. It goes in the shell. I wrote a whole paper.
They turned
about
up the gender dial to max.
Yeah, no, I wrote a paper about it. It's pretty
they
good.
Just amp that shit right up.
Gender. Yeah, gender.
I became
11.
A librarian, a cataloger because of that paper, by the way. I tell that job interviews sometimes. Yeah.
So my origin story is from the mixed up files of Mrs. Basley Frankenweiler.
Oh my god, I love that book.
I decided to be a librarian because I was working in a library, but I got into cataloging and subject headings because I was doing research for this paper. And I was like, am I just not searching right? Like, what? And then my boss was like, here's Sandy Berman. And I was like,
okay, that's
like,
compliment.
Oh shit.
That's a compliment. That's a next level compliment. Sandy Berman's rad as hell.
Oh yeah. The raddest. Okay. I'm very tired.
Yeah. I was tired, but now I'm like awake.
I had a long day.
It's only 7 o'clock for me, so mm-hmm. I could be here all night.
My stimulants mean I wake up early.
I have a delayed chronotype, but my body hurts from riding my bike, but I'm gonna be awake for a while because I'm always awake for a long time.
I've got some leftover Purim seltzer.
I'll probably
hell yeah.
I had like 20 fucking drinks. I don't know how I'm not hungover.
Did you have a sexy Purim costume?
No, I just read the Book of Esther and got really drunk. Yeah. Which is what I usually do every Purim.
It's
also what I do on Halloween.
I did not know that like Purim was a costume holiday until this year. And then I was like talking to my friend about it. I was like, are there sexy Purim costumes? And she's like, oh yes, they're all sexy. And I'm like, no way.
Can non-Jewish people celebrate Purim? This sounds dope.
It's just it's drinking holiday, and you're just glad that the Jews weren't killed.
Yeah, I'm always glad about that.
I feel like
that.
Yeah.
I think,
you know, I'm not Mexican, but like I will get drunk on Cinco de Mayo. Like, so I feel like it's kind of the same thing. I think we should just entirely Americanize Purim and just turn it into yet another American shitty drinking holiday.
So there's a Michael Guest or there's a Christopher Guest movie about this. It's For Your Consideration, where they write a movie about Purim, but then they change it to Thanksgiving.
Okay, I'm gonna I need to watch that.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it. It's not one of his better ones. It's no Waiting for Guffman, but it's pretty good.
Okay, well, we can wrap up. So
it's no Ghost in the Shell.
Arthur says goodnight. He's being a bread loaf behind me.
Good night, Arthur.
Good night.
This is almost as bad as the egg cooking demon TikTok. I hate the egg cooking demon TikTok.
This is...
I'm a scared man.